This is Jules B. Day, welcoming you all to another edition of Ghost Talk, your regular guide to the world of ghosts, apparitions, hauntings, and associated phenomena. This time we'll be looking into an upsurge in reported hauntings in the UK. Dr. Keith Uppick of the British Institute of Psychic Affairs will be asking whether the specter of a notorious Victorian ghoul has come back to haunt modern London, while Ash Dybeck, director of the American Society of Unusual Stuff, and Diane Butts, former paranormal advisor to Vice President Kamala Harris, will be discussing a series of modern-day hauntings which have reportedly been afflicting people up and down the UK. Finally, our resident psychic and paranormal agony aunt, the Reverend Leonard Fanny, will be advising one of our listeners on a very unusual haunting. But first, a roundup of recent paranormal news from across the globe. In Reading, England, investigators have been baffled by dildos, vibrators, and other sex toys raining from a clear sky onto the roof of a suburban house in what could be a very bizarre case of poltergeist activity. In Illinois, several women have complained of having been groped by invisible hands in a department store changing room. In the most recent incident, the 20-year-old victim claimed to have passed out during her ordeal and woken up, clad only in her underwear and covered in what she could only describe as sticky ectoplasm. Finally, in Slovakia, lawyers for a man arrested for child pornography after thousands of indecent images of children were found on his computer have lodged a defense claiming that the machine had been possessed by the ghost of a deceased child molester, who had placed the offending images there. Next up, Dr. Keith Uppick investigates the strange case of Flame Arse Jack, ghostly apparition, prankster, or mass hysteria.
Has a notorious Victorian ghoul returned to terrorize Britain's streets? A flurry of media reports have claimed that Flame Arse Jack is once more abroad, frightening women and children with his anal arson antics while constantly eluding the police's attempts to apprehend him. The first reported victims of this latest manifestation of the burning bummed apparition were the Straggle sisters, whose terrifying experience occurred just a month ago. 19-year-old Jane Straggle describes what happened that night.
I was walking home from a club with my sister, when we saw this weirdo in a top hat and split tailcoat leaning against a wall. As we came level with him, he turned his back to us, bent over and dropped his trousers. We thought he was just some sad drunk perv mooning us. Then there was a roar and this huge blue flame shot out of his arse and hit my sister in the face. After that, he just pulled up his trousers and ran off, cackling and farting maniacally. My sister had to spend several days in hospital. Thankfully, her burns were only superficial and she suffered no permanent damage to her sight. Of course, the police didn't believe us. They tried to blame it on some kind of clubbing-related fart-lighting prank gone wrong.
Despite police skepticism, several more incidents have subsequently been reported. With each new incident reported, the ghoul's powers seem to become more powerful, with some victims reporting that his fiery posterior emissions are accompanied by the sound of crackling thunder, while others have stated that rather than dropping his trousers, he lifts the tails of his coat to reveal that his trousers are backless, his arse ready bared for action. Perhaps most disturbingly, his blue-flamed displays are no longer restricted simply to frightening victims, but are now harnessed to destructive purpose. This new development was apparently first witnessed at a children's playground in Enfield. Mrs. Eileen Frokes.
According to my Timmy, he and his friends were playing quite happily on the swings and slide when this creep in a top hat sidled into the park and exposed his arse to them. Obviously, they were all traumatized to tears by that, but next thing they knew, there were flames billowing from the bastard's backside and engulfing the play area. They all ran away screaming as everything, climbing frame, swings, slide, the lot, went up in flames.
According to Frokes, responding reports of arson, police quickly arrived at the park to find the perpetrator still present.
Well, my Timmy, who was hiding in some bushes, watched as these two coppers got out of their car and approached the bastard, but he just laughed maniacally at them and emitted a huge flame from his behind, which sent him whooshing into the air. He landed behind their car, bent over and shot flame all over it, causing the vehicle to explode, before flying off on his flaming arse again.
Police in Enfield have subsequently denied the loss of a patrol car or of any encounter with flame-arsed Jack, insisting that its officers had simply responded to a report of arson in a local park. They added that the culprits were thought to be local children, dismissing reports of the blazing-bottomed ghoul's involvement as mass hysteria. While some have claimed that flame-arsed Jack, in his current incarnation, is a supernatural phenomenon, pointing out that bare-arsed fart lighting would, under normal circumstances, result in severe burns to the perpetrator's buttocks, whereas the ghoul's behind appears to remain unscathed, most commentators are in agreement with the police. With Professor Bob Mincer, senior lecturer in media mythology at the Thames Valley School of Animal Husbandry, pronouncing the whole thing a hoax.
There can be little doubt that this so-called flame-ass Jack is merely mass hysteria whipped up by the media. None of the reports of his manifestations can be independently verified, and there is no physical evidence of his activities, no CCTV footage or mobile phone photos, for instance. The thing is that once the idea of this sort of thing has been popularized by the media, everyone starts blaming it for every unrelated incident, like the playground arson.
The academic does concede, however, that at least some of the appearances of flame-arsed Jack might be the result of the activities of a flesh-and-blood prankster inspired by the original Victorian ghoul. He points out that the original flame-arsed Jack, who terrorized parts of London in the 1870s, causing tens of thousands of pounds worth of damage with his blazing bum hole, was long suspected to be, in actuality, an elderly cobbler named Matthias Bumble.
All of the property that flame-arsed Jack burned down was reputedly insured by the same company that had refused to pay out when Bumble's workshop had burned down as a result of his apprentice's fart lighting pranks. How he created the flaming arse effect is still a mystery. There was talk of a pact with the devil. But it wouldn't be hard to do without resort to supernatural agency. In the case of the current flame-arsed Jack, he probably has a small butane gas canister gripped between his buttocks, or even up his arse, which he ignites with a lighter. The lack of damage he does to himself is probably the result of shaving his arse to stop his bum hair going up in flames and smearing his buttocks with some sort of flame-retardant grease. He'd only have to perform his act a couple of times and mass hysteria would do the rest.
But are the ghoul's appearances simply evidence of a new wave of mass hysteria gripping the country in the face of multiple economic and political crises, or is something more sinister afoot? Right-wing commentator and self-styled free speech champion Jacob Hubster, author of the book Woke in Fright, which documents supposed incidents of intimidatory wokery against free thinkers, certainly thinks so.
All of the victims in this recent wave of attacks had been expressing their right to free thinking and opposing wokery before being targeted by flame-arsed Jack. The Straggle sisters, for instance, had been objecting to the unisex toilets at the club they had just attended, arguing that they would deprive them of a safe space from sexual predators, while the parents of the children terrorized in Enfield had recently objected to their children being exposed to transsexual propaganda when a drag troupe had performed at their school. The pattern is obvious.
While Hubster claims that scared parents are now warning their offspring that if they aren't woke enough, then flame-arsed Jack will get them, Mincer has dismissed his theory as absolute bollocks.
He really does talk a lot of shite. Look, the only one creating a mythical bogeyman here is him, with his talk of this non-existent wokerati conspiring against bigots. If only it were true and flame-arsed Jack would blow one of his fiery farts into Hubster's face.
Have you had an encounter with flame-arsed Jack or any other resurrected London ghoul? If so, get in touch and tell us your story. It might feature in our planned follow-up item. Next, Ash Dieback and Diane Butts will be discussing a string of highly unusual and very modern hauntings in Britain's new towns and housing estates, right after this message from our sponsors.
Is stubborn stew making your life a misery? God turned that so stage it's welcome. Then try sign no turn. Just shove the wrist stick up yours. Let the toilet paper and bless that mother right out. Sign no turn. It's like shoving the stick of gelignet up your ass. Stubborn stools don't stand a chance.
Dino Turd, guaranteed instant relief from stubborn stools.
The makers of Dino Turd accept no liability for possible damage to toilet bowls or rectal passages. DinoTurd is used entirely at applicator's own risk.
All right, so we've got a real humdinger for you today.
Oh, absolutely.
Buckle up, because this one's, well, let's just say it's got layers.
It does.
So imagine, if you will, Barry Pines.
Yeah.
Just your average bloke in Trowbridge, England, you know, getting ready for bed, gives the toilet a final flush, you know, it's a routine check before hitting the hay, everything's normal.
Right.
An hour later, though, he's jolted awake by these really unsettling noises coming from the bathroom.
Mm.
Moaning sounds, he says, followed by this, a rather significant splunk as something very large meets the water in the bowl.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and there's light coming from under the bathroom door, even though he swore he'd switched it off.
Right.
So cautiously, he pushes open the door, and well, the bathroom's empty.
Empty.
Except for Bara. This absolutely colossal deposit in the toilet. I mean, this thing is, it's epic. It's breaching the waterline, folks.
Oh, my God.
And this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is one of the many wonderfully weird mysteries that you, dear listeners, have brought to our attention for this deep dive.
It's amazing, isn't it, how quickly we can go from the utterly mundane to the deeply bizarre.
That's the thing. It's that jarring shift from the ordinary to the truly inexplicable that makes these stories so compelling.
Absolutely. And it really sets the stage for what we're going to be exploring today.
Because that initial, shall we say, discovery is only the beginning of this paranormal roller coaster ride. Mm-hmm. We're diving deep into two truly strange cases that have come out of England. The first, as you've just heard, involves these, well, frankly, enormous and inexplicable fecal manifestations.
Yes.
The second, well, that involves a ghostly exhibitionist and the, let's just say, the very enthusiastic response from the community.
It's fascinating, isn't it, when you think about it? Both of these seemingly unrelated events really tap into that fundamental human fascination with the unknown, you know, what's beyond the veil of our everyday reality.
Absolutely. And they also highlight the different ways that communities try to grapple with things that just don't fit neatly into any conventional explanation. And the sources we've got for you today are as direct as it gets. First, we have excerpts from the investigations of paranormal investigator John Stirrup. He's the guy who was called in to deal with these ghost turd incidents. And let me tell you, the man has some unique theories.
I can imagine.
Then we have a report from the Axminster Occult Inquirer covering the alleged phantom flasher and the ensuing chaos in the local graveyard. So we've got firsthand accounts, we've got local reporting, the recipe for a wonderfully weird deep dive.
It makes you think, though, doesn't it? How do we actually evaluate these unusual claims? I mean, when we're faced with something so bizarre, how do we decide what's credible evidence? How do personal stories and local accounts shape our understanding, especially when they venture into the paranormal?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And that's exactly why we're here today. Our mission, which we have wholeheartedly accepted, is to take these unsettling narratives, break them down, examine all the strange details, and try to make sense of the explanations being offered, supernatural and otherwise. You know, for you, the listener, we want to extract the most perplexing elements, explore their implications, all without getting too bogged down in the sensationalism, although admittedly there's plenty of that to go around.
Right. It's a delicate balance. It's important to approach these stories with a critical eye, but also with a sense of wonder.
True.
You know, we want to understand the claims, the reasoning behind them, and perhaps most importantly, what these stories reveal about human nature when faced with the inexplicable.
Absolutely. So let's jump right in, shall we? Let's start with, well, might as well call it what it is, the phantom fecal fracas.
Mm-hmm.
It all starts with Barry Pines in Trowbridge. Remember, 11 p.m., pristine toilet, midnight, a symphony of moans, squelches, and quite frankly, a lot of splashing. And then the big reveal, this truly massive creation just sitting there defying all laws of plumbing and possibly physics.
And the fact that it appeared seemingly out of nowhere, right? Barry was the only one home.
Exactly. That's the thing. It immediately challenges any sort of straightforward explanation, you know, one involving a living person.
Hmm.
And then you add in the sheer scale of this thing and its apparent refusal to be flushed. It's just a scenario that's bordering on the absurd. But for Barry Pines, it was very real and very unpleasant.
Unpleasant being an understatement, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. This thing was stubbornly lodged in the porcelain. Barry tried to flush it. Dino-Rod was called in. 4 days, this monumental specimen held its ground, making its presence known with a truly impressive stench. And that's when John Stirrup enters the picture. He's a bit of a legend in UK paranormal investigation circles. And his initial diagnosis, ghost curd, composed of ectoplasm naturally.
Now, for those who might not be familiar with the term ectoplasm, is the substance that's supposedly exuded by spirits or mediums often thought to be the physical manifestation of a ghost.
Right, exactly. And Stirrup's theory was that this ghost turd was the result of a spirit reenacting some traumatic toilet-related death of a previous resident.
Okay. But the sources point out that the house was actually quite new. No history of any deaths, let alone any involving dramatic bowel movements.
Ah, yes. A slight wrinkle in Stirrup's theory.
It's a common challenge in paranormal investigations, isn't it? Trying to shoehorn a supernatural explanation onto events without really considering the facts. Sometimes the more interesting narrative takes precedence over actual evidence.
That's it, in a nutshell.
Wow.
But Stirrup, undeterred by this lack of historical tragedy, decided to tackle the problem head on. So he calls in a priest to bless the water in the cistern and perform a prayer over the toilet bowl.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And get this, after this spiritual cleansing, the deposit finally succumbed to the flesh.
Wow. So a bit of divine intervention to solve a ghostly bowel movement. It's quite a striking image, isn't it? It speaks to that human tendency to rely on familiar frameworks like religion when we encounter the unknown, even when that unknown is something as bizarre as a ghost turd.
You said it. But Stirrup, being the experienced paranormal investigator, he suspected this wasn't the end of it. He figured unless they dealt with the entity directly, it would likely return. And, well, he was spot on.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. A few days later, Barry's awakened again by these moaning sounds. But this time, there's no light under the bathroom door. This time, he feels this ominous warm feeling in his bed. No. And you guessed it, an even larger turd is lying right next to him.
Oh, God.
I know. And here's the kicker, the stains left on the sheets. Stirrup claims they resembled a straining face, like the Phantom Pooper himself caught in the act.
No way.
Way, and these stains were apparently indelible, leading to the only logical solution, burning the sheets.
I mean, at that point, what else can you do?
Exactly. It's a whole new level of haunting, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's gone from the toilet to the bed. It suggests a more direct, a more personal intrusion.
Right. And that image of the straining face, it's so grotesque. It really blurs the lines between the physical and the supernatural.
It does. So naturally, Stirrup decides to step up his game. Barry's relocated to a hotel, while Stirrup sets up infrared cameras and microphones all over the house. 3 nights of intensive monitoring, no sleep for poor John. Nothing. Not a peep, not a flicker, not even what Stirrup lamented as a disembodied fart.
So all that monitoring and not a single shred of evidence?
Nope. His research into the property's history also turned up nothing. No deaths, no tragedies, no ghostly pooper backstory.
It's interesting, isn't it? This inconsistency is a common thread in paranormal investigations. Things happen when you least expect them, when there are no witnesses and no cameras around.
Exactly. It's the nature of the beast, or the ghost, as it were. So Barry moves back in Stirrup, still keeping an eye on things. And then one night, Barry lets out this blood-curdling scream from the kitchen, followed by this just horrific stench.
What?
Barry's standing there with pajama trousers around his ankles, and the entire kitchen sink is filled with a massive turd.
The kitchen sink.
The kitchen sink. This, for Stirrup, was a turning point. His new theory. Possession. He reckons Nary himself is the unwitting vessel, and he attributes this to the fact that the whole housing estate was built on the site of a former sewage treatment works.
Possession, huh? It's a pretty big leap from a haunting tied to the house itself to a possession linked to the land. It does make you wonder, though, why now? Why would a spirit suddenly decide to possess Barry after all this time?
Right. He doesn't really have a solid explanation for what might have triggered this sudden possession. The good news is that once Barry moved out of the property, that was the end of it. No more phantom poo. The new tenants have reported no nocturnal surprises of the fecal variety.
It makes you wonder, though, doesn't it, if it really was connected to Barry somehow, whether it was a genuine haunting of possession or something else entirely.
Well, of course, the skeptics among us might offer up a more mundane explanation, sleepwalking and some good old-fashioned nocturnal accidents. But Stirrup completely rejects that notion.
What?
Yeah, he points to the sheer size of these deposits and insists that no normal human could produce such things and remain unscathed. He claims these were spectral in nature.
It's that classic clash between belief and skepticism, isn't it? Where one side sees evidence of the supernatural, the other seeks a rational explanation.
And to support his claims, Stirrup points to another case, the Plymouth anal haunting. Apparently, this family was tormented by the loudest, most earth-shattering farting noises imaginable. It would shake their entire house, rattle windows, knock pictures off the walls.
Seriously?
Dead serious. And the neighbors could hear and feel these phantom postern blasts, too. Apparently, the stench was unbearable.
Oh, God.
Yeah. At first, they thought it was one of the family members, you know, just messing around.
Yeah.
But even when they were all awake together, the flatulence frenzy continued. It only ever happened at night, though.
So strange. And this is where Stirrup comes in.
You bet Stirrup's called in, and he traces the sounds to a cupboard under the stairs. And here's where it gets really wild. He makes recordings of these spectral emissions, and when he slows them down, he claims they form words. Clear as day.
Words?
Words. He says he heard the phrases, "Get out and walk, Donald," and "More tea, Vicar."
Hold on. More tea, Vicar. What does that even mean?
Your guess is as good as mine. It's so bizarre. And it's this verbal element, the seeming intelligence behind the sounds, that really throws a wrench into any sort of simple explanation.
Right. It's not just random noises anymore. There's a sense of intentionality.
Exactly. And then the Plymouth haunting reaches its truly bizarre climax. Stirrup, in a moment of investigative brilliance or madness, depending on your point of view, decides to place dry ice in the cupboard under the stairs during one of these nocturnal outbursts.
Okay.
As the vapor rises. It forms the distinct outline of what he describes as a disembodied arse, complete with cheeks and anus.
A disembodied what now?
You heard right. A ghostly posterior revealed by dry ice. It's like something out of a fever dream.
It's certainly a unique approach to paranormal investigation, I'll give him that.
And just like the Trowbridge case, this was a newly built house, no history of hauntings. And just as mysteriously as it began, the anal apocalypse suddenly stopped.
So we have two cases now, both in new builds, both with these incredibly bizarre and very specific manifestations.
And Serp's trying to connect the dots. His theory is that when older buildings are demolished, the spirits who resided there are displaced and end up seeking refuge in newer structures.
Interesting. So these spirits are essentially homeless ghosts looking for new digs?
That's the idea. And he offers up another case as an example, the Minehead case. This involved a brand new house where the owner was repeatedly awoken by his washing machine, inexplicably turning itself on and making these god-awful wailing sounds.
A haunted washing machine.
A haunted washing machine Stirrup investigated and claims that he actually saw the ghost of a medieval nun who had apparently been displaced from a demolished nunnery nearby. And get this, he says this spectral nun was using the washing machine's spin cycle for what he delicately termed supernatural orgasms.
Oh my God, are you serious?
I am. I told you this one had layers.
So we've gone from phantom poo to a spectral nun having a washing machine-induced climax.
And it gets even weirder. The method Stirrup used to exorcise the nun, a strategically placed collection of vibrators in the kitchen.
Vibrators.
Vibrators. Apparently, it resulted in an orgasm so powerful that it propelled the nun to the other side, complete with glass-shattering screams of pleasure and car alarms blaring in the street.
Okay, I've officially heard it all.
I'm not sure I even know what to say to that. It's just baffling. And it highlights the sheer range of approaches that people take when dealing with the paranormal. Sometimes it's prayer, sometimes it's vibrators.
It certainly makes you question what's considered normal in the world of paranormal investigation.
No kidding. But let's shift gears now, shall we? We're moving from spectral sewage to phantom flashing. Our second case takes us to a small English town that's been thrown into absolute chaos by the alleged appearances of a ghostly exhibitionist.
From one extreme to the other.
That's the thing with these cases. You just never know what you're going to get. Mm. So we have a mob of over 100 people descending on the local graveyard. They're digging up graves, breaking open coffins, and engaging in some pretty extreme acts of corpse desecration.
It's incredible, isn't it, how these two cases are so different. The first involved these private, disturbing occurrences, and the second is this public spectacle, this outpouring of fear and anger.
And it shows you how powerful those primal fears can be, especially when it comes to the safety of children, even if the perpetrator is supposedly a ghost.
Right, the stakes are just higher.
One of the ringleaders of this graveyard escapade is Barry Plinker. He told the Axminster Occult Inquirer that the police had been bloody useless, completely unwilling to take action against a ghost.
Understandably, I guess. What are the police supposed to do about a ghost flasher?
Exactly. That's what they said. They were basically like, look, we deal with crimes committed by living people, not dead ones.
Makes sense. But that obviously didn't sit well with the community.
Not at all. They were terrified. Their children had been reporting sightings of this ghostly figure in white translucent, appearing suddenly near schools and playgrounds, exposing himself, and then vanishing into thin air.
So initially they thought it was a living person, right?
Yeah. At first they assumed it was just some creep in a raincoat. But the kids were consistent in their descriptions. This figure was see-through and would just disappear in a puff of smoke.
And that's when things escalated.
Exactly. The turning point was when the phantom flasher allegedly appeared inside a child's bedroom, did his spectral deed, and vanished with what was described as an evil cackle.
That's terrifying. I can only imagine how that poor child must have felt.
And of course, it sent the community into a frenzy. Barry Plinker's quote was that appearing in children's bedrooms was a bloody liberty, and he wasn't going to stand for it.
So he decided to take matters into his own hands.
Yep. The police refused to take it seriously. They called it mass hysteria, pointed out the lack of any actual crime, no physical contact, no way to apprehend the suspect. They even refused to perform an exorcism, saying they weren't affiliated with the Catholic Church.
So the community felt like they had no other choice but to act.
Exactly. Plinker and his associates from this local Facebook group had some experience dealing with suspected kiddie fiddlers, as he put it, and they decided to apply those same tactics to the Phantom Flasher.
It's a bit misguided, isn't it? Trying to deal with a supernatural entity using methods meant for living people.
Completely.
Yeah.
But that's what fear and desperation can do to people. So they started with crucifixes and holy water, thinking they could ward the ghost off.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to have backfired spectacularly. Instead of getting rid of the ghost, they actually ended up driving him inside homes and even classrooms.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. There were reports of him exposing himself to groups of up to 30 children at a time.
That's awful. And I bet that really fueled the community's panic.
Absolutely. It pushed them over the edge. They decided that the only way to stop this Phantom Flasher was to destroy the source.
Destroy the source?
Yeah. The thinking was that if they destroyed the ghost's physical remains, the hauntings would stop.
It's a pretty drastic solution. And it's based on the assumption that a ghost is somehow tethered to its physical body even after death.
Right. And that's a whole other rabbit hole we could go down. But for these people, it was the only option they saw.
So that explains the graveyard desecration.
It does. They dug up every grave they could find, smashed open coffins, staked, beheaded, and burned the remains. It was a scene straight out of a horror movie.
It's a truly disturbing image, and it speaks volumes about the level of fear and desperation in that community.
Absolutely. They felt like they were fighting for their children's safety and that the authorities had abandoned them.
But there's another twist to this story, isn't there? The medium.
Oh, yeah. Ava Gustong, a local spiritualist, claims that she made contact with the ghost flasher during a seance. Apparently, he just barged right in, demanded to tell his side of the story.
It's amazing, isn't it? The way these different perspectives can change the whole narrative.
Absolutely. So according to Gustong, the ghostly manifestation started with the classic paranormal sensory overload, the smell of sulfur, the unmistakable aroma of, well, let's just say bodily fluids, and a strong whiff of Old Spice aftershave.
A very specific combination of scents.
Indeed. And then ectoplasm starts oozing from Gustong's mouth, which solidifies into the form of a man wearing a dirty raincoat.
So the classic ghostly figure.
But one and only. And this spectral figure identifies himself as the Flasher. But get this. He denies having any perverted intentions.
He denies it.
He says his actions were motivated purely by revenge.
Revenge.
Revenge. It turns out this guy in life was targeted by Plinker's group. They accused him of being a pedophile. But he claims he was innocent. He admits that he had some sleazy habits, as he put it. You know, frequent trip clubs, watching internet porn, paying for sex. And he says that he had a preference for women who looked young, even those in school uniforms.
That's a dangerous preference to have, especially in this day and age.
It is. And it's easy to see how he might have been misjudged, but he insists that it was all fantasy, that he was never interested in actual children.
So he was essentially the victim of a witch hunt.
Exactly. But despite his protests, Plinker's group subjected him to this terrifying campaign of harassment. It culminated in someone setting his house on fire. He managed to put out the flames, but he was devastated. He ended up taking his own life by arson.
Oh my God, that's awful.
It is. And it's a stark reminder of the devastating consequences of vigilante justice.
Absolutely. People acting on suspicion and fear without any real evidence.
And the ghost claims that's exactly why he's haunting the town. He's seeking revenge on the children of those who drove him to his death.
So it's a ghost story and a revenge story all rolled into one.
And the Axminster Occult Inquirer actually managed to interview the ghost through Gustong. He reiterated his claims, insisted he was innocent, and condemned the actions of the mob who were desecrating the graveyard.
It's interesting that the Inquirer chose to publish the ghost's account. It gives a voice to the accused, challenges the prevailing narrative.
And it raises questions about the role of media in these sorts of situations. Are they simply reporting the facts, or are they shaping public perception? But despite this ghostly testimony, the police are sticking to their guns. They say there's no evidence of any crimes committed by the ghost and no grounds to prosecute the vigilantes for anything other than the grave desecration.
It's a classic example of the legal system struggling to deal with something that falls outside its traditional framework.
Exactly. And here's the kicker. The ghost, having taken his own life by fire, was cremated. His ashes were scattered at sea. So all that grave digging, all that desecration, It was all for nothing.
A lot of effort for absolutely no result. It really highlights the futility of trying to fight the supernatural with earthly methods.
So there you have it, folks. Two bizarre and unsettling tales from England. The enigma of the ghost turds and the disturbing case of the phantom flasher driven by revenge.
Two very different types of hauntings, but both equally strange and thought-provoking.
And it's amazing to think about the range of human responses we see. From Barry Pint's bewildered disgust to the community's outrage and fear. It shows you how the unexplained can disrupt our sense of order and trigger such extreme reactions.
And ultimately, we're left with more questions than answers.
Right. We still don't know what caused those phantom poos. Was it supernatural, psychological, environmental?
Or perhaps some combination of all three.
And how did the flasher interact with the physical world? Was he truly motivated by revenge? Or is that just the story we've created to make sense of the chaos?
It's all about perspective, isn't it? And the limitations of our own understanding.
Exactly. And that's what we want you, the listener, to consider. What do these stories tell us about the nature of reality, the power of belief and fear, and the often unpredictable ways we react to the unknown?
Do these cases challenge your own assumptions about what's possible?
Are these just isolated, bizarre incidents? Or could they be glimpses into deeper unseen forces that are at play in our lives, forces that occasionally break through in the most unexpected and unsettling ways?
It's a question worth pondering.
It is. And it leaves us with one final thought. What other strange tales are out there waiting to be uncovered? What other mysteries lie hidden just beyond the edge of our understanding?
And are we ready to face them if they emerge?
That, my friends, is the question.
A wide-ranging and thought-provoking discussion there from our experts, which, we're sure, will spark a great deal of debate amongst our listeners. And our final item, the Reverend Leonard Fanny will be advising a listener on the problem of my haunted arse. Right after this sponsor's message.
Men, do you feel run down, your masculinity diluted, your sex drive weak? Feel less like the man you used to be? Then try Arnspunk. Swallow just one dose of my silky hormone booster a day and you'll feel your manhood growing back to normal within minutes.
Arnspunk is a fully natural male health complement, guaranteed to bring back your drive and energy or your money back. Try our introductory offer of a 50 milliliter bottle for just $29.99. That's right, just $29.99 to get you back to feeling like a real man.
Guys, every bottle is guaranteed to contain a trace sample of my jism. Really? I spend 12 hours a week jerking off into test tubes to meet demand.
This product has not been tested or approved by the FDA, but some guy appointed by RFK Jr. says that he thinks it is probably okay to drink. This medication is taken at your own risk and the manufacturer accepts no liability for illness or sudden death. If you suffer side effects including impotence, rectal prolapse, hair loss, or vomiting blood, then seek immediate medical assistance.
Hello, I'm the Reverend Lionel Fanny, paranormal expert and ordained priest in the Church of Jesus the Latter-day Naturist. Welcome to Ask the Rev, where I address listeners' supernatural personal problems. This time we'll be looking at the case of my haunted arse, as related by Mr. Behind of Bognor.
Dear Reverend, my arse is haunted. There is no simpler way of stating my problem other than to say that an evil spirit, or perhaps multiple spirits, have taken up residence in my backside, causing all manner of supernatural chaos. All the hallmarks of a classic haunting are present. The nocturnal disturbances, including bizarre noises and knockings with no apparent physical cause, spectral apparitions and even disembodied voices. The biggest mystery, of course, is how it happened in the first place. Houses are haunted by the spirits of those who died there, but, as far as I know, nobody has died in my arse. Certainly, no one has expired of a heart attack while giving me one up the Bourneville Boulevard. It is, perhaps, significant that the disturbances started after I let go a particularly foul-smelling and beer-fueled fart in the pub, which caused a friend to comment, "Jesus, that smells like something crawled up your arse and died." Subsequently, all sorts of supernatural phenomena seemed to have erupted from my behind. The same night as the evil-smelling fart, for instance, while I was crashed out on a mate's sofa, post-pub, lying face down, my mate swore blind that he saw a ghostly figure materialize out of my behind. He described it as looking like white smoke pouring out of my arse, which then formed into a translucent humanoid figure. This then hovered above my posterior for a few seconds before moving off and vanishing into a wall. Consequently, my sheets have been blown off of my bed by what others have described as huge anal explosions so powerful that they shook the house. Despite their volume and ferocity, not to mention their close proximity, the explosions failed to wake me. On other occasions, An evil laugh has been heard to emanate from my bum hole while I slept, again without waking me. More recently, the occurrences have started to manifest during my waking hours. Only the other day my stomach was suddenly gripped with pain. I rushed to the bathroom and sat on the toilet, expecting to experience Bamagadon, but instead of a torrent of hot diarrhea, it felt as if something was trying to claw its way out my arse. Whatever it was wriggled and kicked, before finally getting itself loose and falling into the bowl. When one summoned the courage to look back at it, I was shocked to see some kind of brown homunculus trying to crawl its way out of the bowl. In a panic, I beat it with the toilet brush then flushed it away. I'm terrified that it could come back. Most recently, there have been several incidents of projectile shitting, which have got me banned from a number of local pubs. I'm at the end of my tether with this apparent haunting of my arse and I'm hoping that you, as a man of the cloth with experience of the supernatural, can help me with this problem.
A fascinating case, indeed. While I have been involved in the investigation of a number of hauntings and the consequent laying of a few ghosts, in the purely spiritual sense, obviously, I don't recall anything quite like this. The closest I can think of was that business of the haunted toilet cubicle in West Drayton some years ago. Of course, the identity of the spirit doing the haunting was quite obvious, a middle-aged shoe salesman who had suffered a fatal coronary sitting on the toilet while being fellated by a young man. The young chap, so shocked by what had happened, fled the scene and the poor blighter who had turned up his toes wasn't found for 3 days. It seems that his spirit felt that it couldn't leave until it had returned the favor, so to speak, and had given someone else the sort of ecstatic experience that had carried him off. Which resulted in several unsuspecting users of the cubicle quite a shock when they felt a pair of icy, unseen, lips fastening on their privates. I'm left wondering, however, if your case is a true haunting. As you say, there is no evidence that anyone has ever died in your behind, although, of course, it could be some kind of wandering spirit that you had the misfortune to cross paths with and which has taken up residence in your posterior. Such cases, however, are exceedingly rare. More likely, in my opinion, is that your ass is, in fact, possessed by demonic forces. It is entirely possible that you have come into contact with some kind of possessed object which has, in turn, spiritually infected you. The fact that your possession seems centered on your behind suggests that it might have been a possessed toilet that you sat on at some point. Such things are actually much more common than most people realize. You'd be surprised how often they are used as makeshift altars by devil worshippers. All of which brings us back to that haunted toilet cubicle that was eventually exorcised by pouring several gallons of holy water down the bowl while reading the appropriate prayers above it. I suspect that if you could identify the toilet that caused your possession, then a similar treatment could break the spell and free your bottom. Ramming a toilet brush blessed by a priest around its U-bend would also be advisable, as would smashing the bowl with sledgehammer once it has been cleansed. In the meantime, we at the Church of Jesus Christ the Latter-day Naturist could supply you with some toilet paper sprinkled with holy water and with the Lord's Prayer printed on each sheet. Wiping with this might help keep the demonic phenomena in check. I can also bless some suppositories for you, the insertion of which should also help drive out the devil. I'll be back soon to give more advice on your paranormal problems. So, if your sex life is a hump in the night or you find yourself nocturnally plagued by the attentions of a spectral groper, drop us a line. Remember, I'm also available for weddings, christenings and exorcisms, but the latter only on Tuesdays and Thursday afternoons.
Here at Ghost Talk, we'd be interested to know how effective the Rev's advice has been and hope that Mr. B. Hind will drop us a line soon to let us know how he got on with it. Well, that about wraps it up for this edition. I hope you've enjoyed this latest selection of Ghostly Goings On, and I'd like to thank our contributors, Dr. Keith Uppick, Ash Dieback, Diane Butts, and the Reverend Leonard Fanny. If you did enjoy it, tune in again soon. In the meantime, this is Jules B. Day closing this edition of Ghost Talk and wishing you all happy hauntings.